even when you're in it, it's really hard to like wrap your head around the fact that it's like, okay, I've dropped like 500 meters down, but the bottom doesn't look any closer than like when I started going down. You're 9 days in this like super hard ride. You've come so far and you're like so close to the end. Like, I'm sure if I went to the Grand Canyon without my bike on my back, not at the end of an ultra, I would find it special and amazing. But I think like the added layers of all these other things just made it like extra special and made it extra emotional.
The Tour Divide, the Colorado Trail Race, the Arizona Trail Race, any one of those races is a massive undertaking in itself. But to do all three in one season, well, it's a bit nuts. And yet every year, there are a handful of people who set out to complete all three. They require an immense amount of time, money, and planning, and it can be all too easy for them to stay on a bucket list. But in the very wise words of my husband, if not now, then when? So among those racing all three this year was Jake. Earlier in the season, we recorded a conversation about his Tour Divide run and finally sat down to unpack the other two races that make up the Triple Crown. Jake shares his highs and lows, the most memorable moments on the trail, and of course, his favorite snacks of the year. I also share a little bit about what it's like to dot watch throughout the season. My name is Mel Webb, and this is Detours, a show about bikepacking, ultra endurance, and the many different ways people find freedom on two wheels. We share the highs, the lows, and of course, the detours along the way. This show is made possible by Albion Cycling, clothing and accessories designed to help you stay outside for longer. Jake raced this season in head-to-toe Albion, stuffing his cargo bibs with many Snickers and Nerds gummy clusters, was kept cool by his Traverse jersey, and warm and cozy and dry in their Zoa line. You can get 15% off your next order with our code DETOURS15. All right, on to our conversation. Have you done the math on how many kilometers and thousands of meters of elevation the Triple Crown is?
Short answer is no. I think it's around 6,000 K. If I do like the mental math really quick in my head, maybe more. And then I think it's like 80,000 meters of climbing, maybe a little bit more than that. I think I'm underestimating both of those numbers.
But wait, how many kilometers?
6,000. 6,000 K, 80,000 meters, I think.
That's so much. It's so much. I know people sent some questions to you. I don't know if this makes sense to start there, but which one was the hardest one?
Arizona, I think, was definitely the hardest in like pretty much every way. I think Divide maybe felt like more of a physical toll, but like Arizona was just like really, for me, mentally challenging. And then also just like the terrain was very just kind of slow, which I think is also what led to the mental challenge of it all. But yeah, Arizona easily is kind of like always my answer now.
Well, maybe we'll start there and do a rundown of that race, because I think for folks who've been listening to Detours for a while, we talked about Tour Divide. Actually, we never even talked about Colorado Trail.
No.
So let's quickly go through Colorado Trail, which I'll let you kind of give the Sparks notes on that, and then we can dig deeper.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the Spark notes is I know from experience that I'm not good coming from sea level and showing up at altitude and diving straight into hard riding. And I signed up for Colorado knowing that I would have to do that because I'd already taken so much time off for Divide that there was no way I could acclimate. So I showed up in Durango the day before. One thing I didn't really think about was that every year they flip the start location between Denver and Durango. And when it starts in Denver, you kind of get a nice gradual climb out of the city, and you don't actually get to the high point until you're pretty much 150K from the end when you hit the high point, 200K from the end. We're starting in Durango. You start with a climb from 2,000 meters, basically up to 4,000 meters right away, and you hang around at 4,000 meters for a long time before you drop down a little bit and then climb up again and hit the high point. And coming from sea level, that absolutely destroyed me.
It's not funny, but just like, one, seeing your face explain that so calculated now in hindsight and knowing you didn't think about that, it's just so bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, I knew altitude was going to be a problem, but I had kind of convinced myself that it was going to be better to deal with, like, oh yeah, I'm going to deal with all the climbing right away, like the worst of it, and then I'll be like chill for the rest of it. And like, to a degree, it kind of was almost, but the front was just so, so hard. It took me like 2 days what other people did in a day, basically. So yeah, I was like kind of not really racing for the first while, and then eventually found my groove and got into the racing mindset again. But at that point, I think someone had probably already finished by the time I like switched into a racing mindset. And so any chances of a result were kind of gone. But yeah, still a cool experience. And really, like, I think that's, if I said Arizona was the hardest, I think Colorado is the one that I'm still the most proud of finishing.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I've ever, I don't think I've ever felt as bad during a race as I felt at Colorado. And I also like don't think I've ever come so close to scratching just based off of like not feeling well as I did there. So I'm the most proud of kind of getting through that, overcoming, and then eventually like racing through the last 2 or 3 days and like riding fast and being efficient and kind of finding my groove, because I slept 8 hours the first two nights, plus probably like another 2 hours of napping on like day one and day two, just stopping and sleeping trailside for like 15 minutes because I felt awful. And
I'm having such a hard time sitting here and listening and letting you tell your story, because dot watching this race was one, the most stressful, worst experience ever, and two, laughing mainly because looking at track leaders, you had more stop time than moving time in the first 2 days, which was just like, one, increasing the stress of the dot watching because we weren't, like, one, you were out of service basically the whole time. Two, I was in Kyrgyzstan, so we weren't on the same time zone. We were just on totally opposite schedules, and I was like, Jake is really ill. Like, even if I wanted to, I couldn't be back home to help him in any capacity in under 30 hours, which, like, which, like, a lot can happen in 30 hours. And so it was just like, the dot watching was stressful, but the, yeah, looking and being like, whoa, you have more stop time than moving time.
Yeah, contrasted to like Divide, where I was like pretty militant with like 4.5 hours of sleep every night, and like outside of that, not really stopping very much, and having like what was probably like a 3-to-1 ride to rest ratio there or more, and then going to like a stopping more than riding.
Yeah. And we'll get to the Arizona bit, but Tour Divide was the best one to dot watch, because it was like a treat every time you opened up the tracker, because you would have gone so far because you were going so fast because the terrain allows for that. So it was like, I looked at the tracker the most of that one because it was like exciting every time I looked at it. Whereas like Arizona, which we'll get to how slow it was like, meh, I'll look at that 2 or 3 times a day because the reality is he's probably not gone very far. not because you are slow, but because the terrain is so slow.
Yeah, no. And that was like, I mean, Colorado and Arizona. Colorado is a bit faster, but Arizona, the terrain is just, feels like you're riding through molasses all day. Even though like sometimes you're rolling fast, it's like you don't cover much ground.
Yeah. So Colorado, you got there the day before. We would say, I mean, obviously that's what life allowed, but regret that choice a little bit?
Yes, definitely. But also, like, it's one of those things where I regret it, but I wouldn't have done it differently given the circumstances.
Yeah.
Because I think, like, the circumstances were do that or not do it at all, or go a week before and then, like, do it and then be like, okay, well, I have no time off. I can't do Arizona. Not that I was necessarily fully committed to doing Arizona going into Colorado, but it was still something like, you know, in the back of my mind, I want to not eat up all my time off.
Let's go there to the motivation of the Triple Crown, because I think when we talked about Tour Divide, you had said, I am going to go to Colorado, but like you just mentioned, you weren't really fully committed to Arizona. But this idea of the Triple Crown percolated at some point in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
when did it become a really real thing? Was it after Colorado? I mean, I guess also to that point, did you think about the Triple Crown during Colorado when you were having those really bad times?
Yeah. So like the first part of that, I think it really became real a bit before Colorado, but again, wasn't committed and wasn't necessarily outwardly saying it. And if someone who knew about the triple asked, I'd be like, yeah, maybe I got to like see how Colorado goes, and very much was like taking it day by day. And then after Colorado, I think the week after, I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do Arizona. That's silly. Like, this was so hard. There's like no reason to do another one. And then a week goes by and I'm like, I'm doing Arizona. Like, I'm going to do it. I've come so far. And I mean, you said it's like, it's silly to do two and not do the third. And I was like, yeah, the realization hits that it is silly. And then, yeah, like, was I thinking about Arizona during Colorado? Yes. There was points when I was thinking about scratching where I was like, well, at least I don't have to do a third one of these this year if I do scratch. And then getting, yeah, towards the end, I was like, well, if I finish this, like, you know, that's going to be enough for this year. Like, I'm going to be satisfied. I don't have to do Arizona. So I think both sides of me during Colorado was like, I'm not doing Arizona. And then like, as soon as I'm a week removed, and this is like, has been a bit of a pattern this year. I finished Divide. I'm like, I'm not doing Colorado. This is enough. And then Colorado registration opens. I'm like, I'm doing Colorado. And then a week goes by after Colorado.
Well, you knew you were doing Colorado before registration opened because you had the date penciled into your calendar. You knew, like...
Yes. I did know, but it was like, it took time after Divide to commit to be like, yes, yeah, I'm doing it. Because, yeah, it was like, yeah, when I'm in recovery from a race, I think it's really hard to mentally wrap my head around doing all of that over again. But I think the interesting thing about the Triple Crown and the way that it's ordered with Divide first is you're not really doing it again because the other two races don't feel anything like Divide. So it was kind of a bit of a fresh race and fresh experience because I'd never done stuff so single track heavy as those two races.
Yeah. To go from, I think it was Alex Kowalski who, when you were racing Colorado Trail, he was dot watching and he was like, it's so, or did he race?
He was racing racing. He probably finished fast enough that he was able to dot watch me afterwards.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Thanks for jogging my memory on that one. It was, yeah, he had finished racing and I was posting updates about you and he was like, holy shit, it's so impressive how Jake is doing after coming from a road race that is Divide. He called Divide a road race, which when you compare and contrast the two, it probably felt that way.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, Divide, like I could, if someone was like, you have to do Divide on a gravel bike, I would confidently say, yeah, that's fine. I'm happy to do that. I'd rather be on something with more comfort, more suspension, but happy to do that. Whereas the other two, it's like, it blows me away that people are running hardtails at Colorado and Arizona. Cause I was like, I'm full suspension and using all of my suspension pretty much at some points.
Yeah. And I guess like on a level of technicality for Colorado Trail, where did it rank for you?
That's like a tough one coming from where we live with like the North Shore Mountains here being like the kind of super steep, janky mountain biking that it is. Like that's kind of like my only real reference point has been like Pacific Northwest and like BC mountain biking. And so I didn't find Colorado to be super technical. It was more of the riding I actually prefer to do, which was like fun, flowy, fast single track. But I think for me racing an event where there's so much single track and it can be rough, it's nice to know that I don't have to like have a perfect line with like a full suspension bike. Mm. And so I think that's why I liked having full suspension. Cause yeah, I really don't think it was like crazy, crazy technical. And I like could definitely do it on a hardtail, but I wouldn't want to.
Well, and you're tired too. Like you, as you said, like you don't really have to be as good of a mountain biker if you're on a more forgiving bike.
Mm-hmm.
And
can make mistakes at night too, which is the other thing where it's like, if you're just riding in the beam of your light, you can take a bad line and then your bike can kind of save you a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So you're happy with the choice to ride a full suspension bike for sure for Colorado and Arizona. You had a dropper.
Yeah. yeah, had a dropper for both and loved it for both of them. I think essential in Arizona.
Maybe controversial take, but you also ran a Dynamo for those.
I did. Everyone, well, I shouldn't say everyone. A lot of people said that like a Dynamo wasn't going to be super useful at either of them. And I found Colorado in particular, it was super useful. There's a lot of like what they call wilderness bypasses, which is sections of either pavement or gravel road between sections of the Colorado Trail where the it theoretically crosses the entire route you can do on single track, but it's close to bikes. And so those sections, having a Dynamo, I was able to get a good charge if it was during the day. If it was during the night, I was able to kill my other handlebar light and just run off the Dynamo light. And so for me, I thought it was super useful there and also very useful in Arizona. So yeah, if I was to do them again, I would 100% bring a Dynamo again.
That's so interesting because a lot of like gearheads would be like, oh, you're not going fast enough. It doesn't matter. But
I think it's like one of those things where it's to each their own. I mean, you have even like people who have been bikepacking for a while and had Dynamos. Now they're doing divide on just battery powered lights because batteries are so good nowadays. I overpack food every time I do a race because I'm so panicked about running out of food. It's the same for me with batteries and with lights. And so to have the peace of mind of the Dynamo,
yeah,
I think is worth like any penalty of it, like being slower and maybe like not being as useful 100% of the time, but like the 30% of the time it is useful, I'm trying to make the most of it because I know it's gonna help me keep my batteries topped up or like reduce my battery usage of other lights.
Well, and to that point, thinking about the resupply on Colorado and maybe this applies to Arizona too, what were the opportunities to sleep indoors and actually charge things?
Yeah, I mean, on Colorado, the way it timed out for me, I only had one chance to sleep inside, and that was in Leadville. And I had actually planned to skip Leadville and like not sleep inside at all. And then I was at a gas station talking to you just outside of Leadville. You can take a bypass that skips the town and like, I think saves probably about 3 kilometers and 100 meters of climbing. And I was going to do that. I was like, I don't need to do a full resupply. I don't need to sleep. I can just keep going. I have 2 more nights, whatever. And you're like, the sun's setting right now. Like, why wouldn't you just grab a hotel and have a good sleep? And I was like, why wouldn't I grab a hotel and have a good sleep? That's a good point.
I think it was 7 p.m. when you were there and you were toying with the idea and I didn't really tell you what to do, but I just was kind of like...
No, you like were like, why wouldn't you do that? And I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, why wouldn't I? And so I got on booking.com and I found a place and I was like, it's cheap enough. I can justify this. And I booked it.
Yeah. I think getting the indoor sleep is always important, albeit sometimes slower, but it helps you reset. I think one of the things that we didn't really talk about, or maybe we did between us, because I guess every time we talked on Colorado Trail, it was more like a panicked phone call or like a panicked text message of at the beginning, it was you telling me how horrible you felt and me just being like, be safe, pay attention. I think Nelson and Regina were probably a bit sick of me. I was staying at their house when all this was happening. Like every morning I was like, oh, Jake is so ill. He's going to scratch. I was like so, so, so stressed. But we didn't really talk about how, while feeling that horrible with altitude sickness and all the things, like how you mentally got yourself through and all, and also how you weighed whether or not it was appropriate to keep going.
Yeah, I mean, the weighing whether it was appropriate to keep going was like factored into my sleep decision making for sure. And like also just race decision making and like continuing, but particularly sleep, like I vomited from altitude sickness at 6 p.m. on the second day. And so like that happened and then like the sun started to set and I just was like, okay, I'm going to sleep now because I like feel awful and I'm going to see how I feel when I wake up. And I woke up and I like still didn't feel great. And I was like convinced I was going to scratch. But one of, I guess, the nice parts of the course is that you are not anywhere convenient to scratch for most of it. Like on any of the single track sections, you are far away. If I wanted to scratch, I was going to have to ride the single track out for, I think it was probably like 40K, cross over the high point of the course as well, and then eventually get to a road, and then take the road off course to a town that has like no bus service, and then hopefully like hitchhike a ride somewhere.
Ooh.
And so like, I think the logistics of it kind of was like, well, it makes more sense to just continue forward on the course for a bit longer and get to a major town.
But like kind of boneheaded.
Kind of boneheaded. But I mean, also by the time I got to the road, I had dropped like 1500 meters and I went from feeling like, oh man, like this isn't good. Like I'm genuinely not, it's not safe for me to continue, to being like, oh, I actually feel not bad. And then so I kept going on the course and it dropped even more. And then I got into gravel roads and I was like, oh, like I actually feel really good now, and was able to like start pedaling reasonably hard and like start making forward progress. And it was interesting that same day, the Colorado Trail overlaps for one section with the Tour Divide route. And you're actually like on the same road going the same direction for maybe 500 meters over a kilometer. But I was like looking around, I was like, this looks familiar. And I didn't actually know that I was on that section. I was like, wait a minute, like I've been here before. Like I know where this is. Like,
yeah.
And I kind of felt at home and felt like, okay, no, I can like keep going and keep doing this. And I felt like really motivated all of a sudden.
This was day three or?
This is day two.
Oh my God. This is totally your story, but like my experience of all of this happening, maybe it was because I was on the other side of the world. Maybe it was because I'm, you know, I love you and I was stressed.
Wait, no, this is day three, right?
Okay, but still.
I was just doing the math in my head.
Okay, but still to that point, it all still stands. 3 days is not very long. Mm-hmm. And like, yes, of course, take bad symptoms seriously, but like, objectively, you only had 48 hours feeling really, really garbage before things got better. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just the like paranoia and the like, I think anybody listening who dot watches somebody they love can relate. Like, you're getting information in like morsels, mm-hmm. and sporadically. And so the update you get each day is like, I feel horrible. XYZ symptoms. All right, I'm going to carry on and see. And that's the information you're getting. And so those 2 days, it felt like you were sick for a really, really, really long time, when in reality, it was a pretty short period of time. Now, of course, like, again, if symptoms are really dire, you shouldn't ignore them. But like, it felt like a lifetime and that you were sick for a really long time.
Yeah. I mean, even in the moment, it felt like a really long time, because it was like, I think 2.5 days from the start to like when I started to feel better. And like, of course, I started to feel better when I got lower, which is like always what you should do when you have altitude sickness, is like try and get down. And like when you're in a race, obviously, that's like not the easiest advice to follow, because it's like, okay, my only way down is to go up more and then down if I want to stay on course, or turn backtrack around and scratch in the moment. And for me, I was like, well, like, I think I just have to go forward and see. And like, as soon as I saw that I was feeling better when I got down and saw, oh, I only get lower over the next 100K, I was like, I can keep going for at least another day and then just continually reassess. And slowly felt
better.
Wrong
year to do the triple crown with the start in Durango. But yeah,
mm-hmm.
You said it was some of the most beautiful riding you'd ever done in your life.
Yeah, Colorado Trail was pretty mind-blowing, particularly like when I felt the worst. Those first two and a half days that stretched through the San Juans is like the most beautiful riding and like the most beautiful setting I've ever done. Like, it feels a lot like Kyrgyzstan, but even more remote, because you're on single track. You're not on a road, and you're on a stretch of single track that's like 100K straight of single track. And so there's no signs of vehicles.
Crazy.
There's no houses. There's no like outhouses. It's just like
mountains
everywhere. And it's like really quite a special feeling. And the other thing I realized is, because it's a hiking trail, hikers are extra, extra good at packing stuff in and packing stuff out, because they're traveling on foot. If they see a piece of garbage, they're picking it up. Whereas like, bikers, if they drop a piece of garbage, they might not realize it. And then the next rider doesn't see it until they're on top of it. And they're like, oh, I'm going at 15, 20K an hour.
Yeah,
I can't stop to grab that. And so there was no garbage or trash or like really any signs of life, except for this little strip of dirt that just kind of wrapped its way into the mountains, which was like, yeah, I don't think I'd really ever experienced that for such an extended period of time. I've experienced that for like little 10K bursts, 20K bursts here and there, but for like a full day of like no signs of civilization was crazy.
Yeah, it definitely makes me want to go bike pack it.
I really want to go back and tour it with you.
I don't know if it's some, I think it's just like, I'm not a great mountain biker. I need to maybe stop saying that. I think I'm better than I think I am, but
you're definitely better than you think you are, and you could definitely do it.
But yeah, it looked incredible. I don't know about racing that one though, mainly just because I think like it's really hard, but then here I am doing Highland Trail. That's besides the point. You started to feel better around day three on Colorado Trail. And then it was just like, you know, kind of smooth. I shouldn't say smooth sailing, but it seemed like there was two halves to your race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like kind of the first 3 days and then the second 3 days, because it was about 6 days, like a little over 6 days. But yeah, the first like 3 days were just brutal sickness slow. And then the next 3 days, I found my rhythm. You kind of stayed lower for longer. And like anytime you did go up, you came back down right away. So it was, I'd feel weak getting up high, but I wouldn't necessarily like have prolonged experiences of like feeling altitude sickness. It'd be like, oh, I'm like have shortness of breath and feel a bit like sleepy. And then I'd get low and I'd be like, I'm fine again. And then the terrain also gets just a bit more varied, I guess. So you still have lots of long single track sections, but it's kind of balanced with some more gravel roads and some more paved roads. Whereas like the first, when you start in Durango, the first like 200 plus kilometers is basically all single track with like one 10K stretch of road in the middle.
So hard.
And so, yeah, it's just like a lot of time with your brain fully switched on to the riding and like to where you're going. Whereas like as soon as you get on the roads, you can kind of tune out a little bit and just focus on putting power through the pedals and making forward progress. So yeah, I think like that second half definitely did me well. And yeah, I think if I were to tour it, or I don't think I'll ever really race it again, but I think if I was to tour it, I would definitely want to start in Denver, because easier build in with the altitude, but also you kind of get, you have a few days to get your sea legs under you with the single track riding.
Literal sea legs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I do wish you had acclimated, but also having a job, taking days off, minimizing unpaid time. It's just the way.
Yeah, you kind of just got to balance it out. And I think like it's one of those things where if I was traveling further for it, I'd probably be like, oh, this is like a big trip and a big deal. I have to like acclimate. But because it's like a 2 and a bit hour flight to Denver from here, it kind of just feels like an easy little trip. And so I think because of that, I kind of minimize it in my mind of like, oh yeah, it's like, it's not that far away. I don't really have to do all this like stuff. It's like a local race practically. And then yeah, the reality of it kind of sets in when you're on that first climb and the sun is rising and you're already feeling a bit like dying.
Well, you lived, you learned. Did you have expectations for Colorado, or it was like, I ticked the box of Tour Divide, now we go and tick this box, and it's more like a triple crown completion or bingo card, if you will?
No, I had expectations. I wanted to race Colorado. Leaving Durango, I was like staying with like at the front of the group on the pavement and then climbing really hard when the single track climb started, and then quickly put myself into the red, which probably just like exasperated the altitude sickness symptoms I felt later in the day. But because even like, I mean, 2000 meters for some people doesn't sound like a lot, but coming from sea level,
it's a lot, especially if you're pushing hard.
Yeah. And so, yeah, pushing hard out the gate to be like, I want to stick with people. And like, I don't know, at that point of the people doing the triple crown, I was the fastest on Divide. And so I kind of had it in my mind. It's like, I'd love to be the fastest overall this year. And so I was like, Alex Schultz had like, and Zach, they both had very fast Divide times. So I was like, I want to like stick with Alex, stick with Zach and be like up there. And Alex and Zach, they're both phenomenal mountain bikers and super fit. But yeah, they pretty quickly left me in their tracks.
I love that you said that you had expectations and that you like really wanted to go after these things. I also can't help but wonder if you would have felt the same level of altitude sickness had you eased into the race, and if you would have been able to like negative split it in a way, because obviously like you can only acclimate gradually. And so I do wonder, without like planting that seed and regrets, but I wonder if things would have shaken out differently if you had maybe had a slower first day.
Yeah, for sure. I think I still would have been hit pretty hard by altitude sickness, but I think I probably would have covered more ground on day one and maybe been able to sleep lower if I hadn't gone so deep. Because by the time I was 5-6 hours into the race, oh, I guess it started early. Yeah, 6-7 hours into the race, I'd like got to close to 4,000 meters and then done a descent, and I'd like crashed on a shale descent, and I'd had to like already take a couple naps. Whereas I think if I'd paced a bit more, I probably wouldn't have like made a dumb mistake and crashed. I probably wouldn't have been like, oh, I need to like take naps, because I would have been a bit more energized and could have just been a bit more meaningful and then gotten down lower and had a better, more restful sleep instead of just kind of like tossing around in a bivvy for 8 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you live and you learn. I feel like each of these races could be its own podcast. Mm-hmm. Before we go to Arizona, maybe we'll package it up into Arizona, because there's like a funny, quirky element to the Triple Crown where like you don't have your stuff at the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of want to talk about the thrifting outfits, but maybe we'll rank the outfits from the year at the end.
Yeah.
So let's put a pin in that one and kind of jump ahead to, you finished Colorado. You told me you were like, I'm not doing Arizona. And maybe you were looking for love. And like, I don't know what kind of response you maybe wanted from me. But I, being who I am, I was like, well, that'd be fucking stupid if you didn't. And I was like, you have to go. And I'm sure you felt some of those things too. You probably like the healthier maybe response would have been like, whatever you want. I don't know. But I was like, every time you talked about not going, I was like, that is stupid.
Yeah. And then you piled on being like, yeah, I told Nelson you don't want to go. And Nelson says that's stupid. And I'm like, but no, I mean, I think I went really quickly from like not wanting to go to maybe feeling obligation to go to like wanting to go, not necessarily to complete the Triple Crown, but because I'm like, I want to complete the Triple Crown and I want to do Arizona. And like, it wasn't necessarily, I'm just doing this for the sake of the Triple Crown. It was like, I also like want to do this race. It's something I've wanted to do for a long time. And kind of, I guess, the theme of the year, like, if not now, when?
Yeah.
And that was like how I ended up doing Divide. And I think how I ended up doing Triple Crown, because it's like you finish Divide and you're like, well, I don't know when I'm ever going to do that again. So when would I find the time to do that again and then do two more races? So like, why not just push through it all?
Did you feel tired going into Arizona? And I guess tired could be broken down into physically and mentally. Like they can be two separate things.
Yeah, I think physically I felt relatively fresh going into Arizona.
Minus your fingers.
My fingers going into Arizona had time. Going into Colorado, I felt physically tired, mentally tired.
Oh, yeah.
Everything. Your physio, it's just
Charlie,
like a month.
When you
came, yeah.
Say what Charlie said when you came back from Tour Divide and just describe that experience.
Oh, I'm trying to remember exactly what I said, but I'd like come back from the race. And he was just like, kind of asked like, oh, like what other plans do you have for the year? I'm like, well, I'm doing another race in like 5 weeks. And his face just kind of like, his eyes went wide. He's like, what do you mean? And then I explained that I was going to do this other race in Colorado. I'm like, yeah, and if that one goes well, like there's one in Arizona. And if I do all three, get like this Triple Crown completion, like only like 20 or so people have ever done it. And as soon as like I told him about the whole thing, he's like, we're going to get you through this. Like, I'm going to make sure you're like ready for all of them and your body's back together. And he made it his mission to make sure I was ready
Shout out Charlie in Myo Detox. Also, not that this detail is super important, and I hope you guys don't look up where we live. but it
They're
is
reasonably
actually,
close to us.
We can like see the physio clinic from our house. So it is, anyways, the folks at Myo Detox are just amazing and cool that Charlie was really on your team to get you there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was super key, I think, because I had lots of nerve issues in my hands and turns out muscular issues as well in my hands from holding handlebars a lot. So yeah, it was great to have him make sure I was all together, ready to go.
So physically good, mentally good going into Arizona?
Yeah, I would say like mentally I was determined. I wouldn't say I was actually mentally tired either because I'd had enough time off between Colorado and Arizona. And like, yeah, I was just kind of ready to do it. And I knew that it's like, okay, I did 16 days undivided. I did 6 days in Colorado. Like, what's one more race? Like I can do this. I can get through it. It's 1300K. That's no problem.
1300K is a lot of kilometers.
It was a lot.
With a,
a lot of slow kilometers.
Walk. And yeah, as I said at the beginning of this episode, the dot watching was not riveting. Not because I don't love you, but because it was like, oh, he's gone. I don't like you were going like 2 miles per hour frequently. I think your average moving speed was 5 something.
Mm-hmm.
So there was very few, you know, it was pretty predictable where you would end up on a given day because it was all slow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was all slow. And like the funny thing that I've thought about a lot in hindsight is that day one, I remember being like, this is so slow. But now like looking back, I'm like, oh, day one out of like the first 4 or 5 days, day one, I think was the fastest day out of all of them. It was like the most rideable and the most efficient.
Seriously?
Yeah. I think day one, I covered the most ground out of the first 5 days until I got past picket post.
Crazy. Also, before I forget, because we cannot forget, shout out Patty from, she lives in Tucson, right?
Yes. Yeah. Patty. She's a listener of Detours and also just an unreal human being who offered me a place to stay, a ride from the airport, and then drove me all the way from Tucson down to the border for the start, which is not a short or easy drive, requires some off-roading to get down there. It was about like, it was like 2.5, 3 hours to get me to the border. And then she had to drive all the way back to Tucson. So yeah, if it wasn't for Patty, I probably wouldn't have made it down to the start, or I would have like, I don't know, hitchhiked and ridden partway.
I got to say, that is literally the coolest part about this podcast is the number of people who have sent emails, DMs being like, when you visit X part of the world, you have a couch to sleep on or da 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 da. On that note, I hope you don't take this the wrong way, Patty, if you're listening, but my mom was like, how do you know this person? Like, she was so concerned about the whole situation. But I think for the most part, this community is so incredible. People are trustworthy. It was just like so foreign to my mom because she's not in like in the community. You know, it's a pretty couch surfy. You put a lot of faith in humanity, and I would say almost all scenarios work out. I'm sure there's horror stories out there for sure, but my mom was like, oh, I don't know about this. I don't know about this. I'm like, this person has like reached anyways.
Yeah. I remember explaining to her, like when she was concerned, I was like, well, like I stayed with like Zach, a guy who I've only known for like riding with a few days on the Tour Divide and then like messaging back and forth before then. I stayed with him before Colorado. After Colorado, I stayed with Josh, who I literally met in the last like 2 hours of my race, and he offered me a place in his home, which was just like unreal. And so, yeah, I think there's just like kind of this natural thing where we all want to help each other out because we're all self-supported for these big stretches during races, but then before and after them, like everyone kind of leans on each other and helps wherever they can, which is, I think, so cool.
Yeah, just so classic mom to be worried. All that is to say, shout out Patty. You are a real one. that was like such a nice message that she sent me and said, put me in touch with Jake. I'm very happy to help him. And it was really reassuring for me to know that you were like, you had that kind of support and landed. And like, I don't know, going to a race by yourself can, like, I remember going to Atlas, like, it's nerve wracking. You don't really, it's nice to have people around you who are comforting.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, and nice to not have to like think of like be stressed about logistics as well and be like, oh, I have to do this and that. Like Patty was like, oh, like we're going by grocery store. Do you want to get like stuff from the grocery store? I'm like, yeah, I don't know what I need, but I think there's something I need. And then like get in there and like figure out, oh yeah, I need like all this food, like all this stuff. It was just,
you
yeah,
really
so
didn't
huge.
Need any more food. That's a great place to start with Arizona because it's more mainly just crazy. What food did you go to Arizona with / sports nutrition?
Okay, so I brought 10 Pro Bars because I was like, I'm going to have one each morning as my breakfast because they're really nice breakfasts. They're like 400 calories a piece. Like it's like eating a bowl of oatmeal, but in bar form. So I brought 10 of those.
I wouldn't go that far, but...
I think I brought 12 packs of Carbs Fuel drink mix, which is like 300 calories a piece, roughly 50 grams of carbs each. So that's like very calorie dense stuff. I loved those for all three races this year. I brought 12 Morton gels or 10 Morton gels. I like Morton gels.
Sorry, Morton.
Yeah, Morton, sponsor me. Don't sponsor Mel. I brought 5 packs of Morton caffeinated drink mix. I brought 5 Carbs Fuel caffeinated gels. I brought 5 Never Second caffeinated gels because I was worried about needing caffeine. I brought 12 Morton.
Oh my God,
solid
Morton
bars,
sponsor this man.
Or Carbs Fuel, either one. I think that was all the sports nutrition I brought. Oh, I also brought 12 individual packets of Scratch hydration mix and a tube of Noon with caffeine in it.
Did you finish all of it?
I finished everything except for one Pro Bar. And I think the only reason I didn't eat that one Pro Bar is because I was at a store, I think it was Grand Canyon Village, and they had a s'mores flavored Pro Bar. And I got all excited to try it because I was like, this sounds insane. We don't have these in Canada.
Was it good?
It just tasted like every other Pro Bar I've eaten
no.
in my life.
No.
Which isn't to say Pro Bars taste bad. I just like when you eat them every day, you do start to get a bit of palate fatigue. And so I didn't love it as much as I wanted to. But that's the only reason I brought one Pro Bar home.
I'm picturing like a nice, yummy, marshmallowy.
That was
delicious.
My, yeah, and more chocolatey, but no, it wasn't that.
And that's probably like amplified when you're in a race and you read a label and you're like, oh, this is gonna be the best tasting
yes.
thing ever. And you start like salivating and thinking about all these things, and then you eat it. And most of the times it still tastes pretty phenomenal, but if you're expecting something different, it might hurt your soul.
Yeah, no, that definitely happened. I think like Pro Bars, I've like fully Pro Bars, and then the Morton solid bars, I'm fully fatigued on them. They've all the Morton bars, they all taste the same. There's only 2 flavors, but both of them have melded together for me. And then like, I think I brought 5 different flavors of Pro Bars, and like, I could blind taste them and I could not tell you what any of them were. I don't think they
I think
all
the
just
peanut
taste
butter
the
chocolate
same.
One actually does taste different because that one's pretty
it tastes
rich.
More peanut buttery. Yeah.
Yeah. But the rest are kind of all blend together.
So that was the sports nutrition I started with. And then when I was in Tucson, I also bought Nerds gummy clusters, quite a few Snickers.
If you're listening in Europe, can you confirm if Nerds gummy clusters are a thing over there, because they have gone crazy in North American
backpacking. They're the best. I couldn't imagine living without them. We might have to like import them over there, and that could be our $1 million business ideas, Nerds gummy cluster importers, because I'm sure they will do well there if they're not already there.
Okay.
I think that was it that I got in Tucson. I can't think if I brought anything else, but yeah. So I started with a lot of food and a very heavy pack as a result.
And I will say, Nerds gummy clusters came home with you.
They did, yes.
There was a Snickers in that bag.
Yep.
There was some other things.
But this was all stuff I'd bought en route, to be
yeah,
fair.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think we've officially eaten the rest of the Arizona Trail food by now. Ooh,
there's
that weird cookie with the guys' faces
I
on it.
I ate the cookie. The Larry and Lenny protein cookies. Those are my my dinner most nights while racing in North America because they're 16 grams of protein and like a decent amount of carbs. One of those and a protein bar is like, it's my post-ride meal pretty much every night while racing. But the other thing I discovered is Larry and Lenny, the protein cookie brand, they make protein pretzels as well.
Oh, God.
They were actually delicious. I only saw them in one place and I bought them the only time I saw them. And I looked for them everywhere else and wished they had them. But they were actually really good. I think I got pizza flavored ones and they were amazing.
Ew.
No, they were really good. No.
Pizza flavored protein. America and North America has gone too far with the protein food. And I stand by that. The whole protein craze is taking, maybe it's happening in Europe too, but I'm not with that.
In day-to-day life, I 100% agree with you. In my ultra racing life, I disagree because I feel like I need it.
5 grams of protein per hour, if I digested that correctly from Yuri, which is probably not a blanket statement, but I digress.
Yeah. The biggest struggle I've had with the protein stuff is all of like the Quest products that are available in gas stations because they're all low carb, high protein, which is absolutely useless for me, in my opinion. I want carbs and protein.
You want everything and everything. Yeah.
If I look on the back and it's like 3 grams of carbs and like 20 grams of protein, it goes back on the shelf.
Yeah. The cool part about Arizona that I definitely want you to tell people about this experience is the start and where it begins and the like camping out with everybody.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I didn't realize this was such a thing before going to it. I was kind of like, oh, you like get to the start the morning of. And Patty obviously was like, I'm not a morning person. I would not be able to drive people there either. But she was like, I can drive you the night before. And I was like, yeah, it sounds like a few people are camping out the night before. So that works perfect. Nice and easy. I get to sleep in a bit more. I think pretty much everyone camped except for maybe 5 or 10 people. And so you just kind of like rock up and you're in this field and there's just people with their bivvies or tents set up like everywhere. Some people that have their families go, like have camper vans that they've brought out for the night or like trucks with rooftop tents and stuff. And so you're just like out there camping with a bunch of other bikepackers, which was, I think, super fun and something like I had no idea was a thing until I got there and I was like, oh, like literally everyone is here doing this. This is super cool.
And John, I'm going to say his last name wrong, but John, who organizes AZT, he also camped out.
Yeah, he also camped out with us, which was awesome. There was people from like the Arizona Trail organization there as well with some like scratch labs that they were giving out to people. Yeah, no, it was just like super cool to sort of have like a big community, almost like event where people were just kind of like mingling around and like, some people stayed up late. Some people went to bed right when the sun went down. And so it was just, yeah, it was cool to start like such a long solo pursuit like that, but be in like that real communal fun vibe.
Yeah. And Zach was there. Did Marone camp out too?
I don't know if Marone camped out. I didn't see him until the morning of the start. He came and found me and gave me a big hug from you and said, hey. So it was great to see him.
It's so cool. I thought that was just pretty amazing that I love the camp out vibe. I think the further events in the UK also have a camp out element to them, but I think that's such a nice way to bring people together on what is like a very self-supported thing. Then yeah, I mean the race itself, what was your finishing time?
Oh, 11 days. She liked the math backwards, like 11 days, 14 hours. Something like that.
Had you mapped out the time of how long you thought it would take?
So I I thought it would take me around 10 to 11 days, but I was a little overambitious with my flight booking of thinking I would be closer to the 10-day mark, which I was not. And also I was kind of like overambitious about like the logistics of getting from Flagstaff to Phoenix.
Which we'll get there. But yeah, so slower than you thought. Was that like terrain? Was that fatigue? What was like?
I think it was just terrain. I mean, it's like a slow course for everyone. Like the winner did it basically exactly 2 days faster than me. which is like fast on that course, like under 10 days is fast. But yeah, it's like, it's a slow 1300 kilometers. There's lots of hiking, especially like it's just gotten slower over the years. Like the Lemon Push got added in 2023, I think, or 2022, which like the background on that is really funny. Basically all the single speeders didn't want to ride up the paved climb up Lemon because on a single speed, that's not a very fun climb. So they're like, we're going to take the official AZT, which is this like push basically up the side of Lemon.
Well, it's actually a downhill mountain bike trail, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a downhill mountain bike trail slash hiking trail. I didn't see anyone riding down it, but I definitely could see how people would ride down it. Yeah, and so they were like, we're going to go this way. And John was like, okay, you can do that. And like, I will recognize that as like part of the official course. And so they did it and they all said it was great. And so he's like, okay, next year, that's the course. The road isn't an option for the 800 anymore, only for the 300 mile route. So yeah, so that's how the Lemon Push got added in. And then the Arizona Trail organization is continually adding more single track to try to bypass as much gravel road and off-road sections as possible. And so there was a section that we rode on day one that was built a week before, I think.
Wow.
And then other longer stretches where Zach, who's done the race two or three times before, he was like, this was a gravel road down there last time I was here. Now we're on this single track up here. And so they're continually adding single track, which is super cool for the sake of the route, but for racing sake, it does make the course just get progressively slower every year as you remove these like faster, more efficient gravel road sections. So yeah, it's not the fastest race. But
Alex Schultz probably super happy about those choices.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I am too, because it is kind of cool to have so much single track. Like it is interesting going from Colorado where there was, I think it's about 80% single track, to going to this where I think it's at up to like almost 93% or something like that, or 91%, some crazy high number. Yeah.
Whoa. That is a lot of single track. But I think the trail was in pretty bad, aside from the new sections, maybe there was, where was the section that it was like really, really washed out and super slow?
Yeah. I mean, most of the first 300 miles, there was lots of stuff where there had basically half a year's worth of rainfall in a 24-hour period about a week before the race. And so there was tons of sections where trail hadn't necessarily washed away, but it had gotten super eroded. And there was like, you could see where like water had run down the middle of the trail and just kind of eaten away at it. And so there wasn't really convenient places to put your tire. You'd be riding over like super rough, rocky stuff that probably a week beforehand was actually like tightly packed dirt and gravel, but all of that had washed away to just like exposed chunky rocks. And so the whole first like 300 miles was a lot slower than usual. And then even like the descent into Picket Post, it was funny. John was commenting on how much slower people were getting from like the top down because of how slow it was. Apparently normally it's a really lovely, fun single track descent, but yeah, there was stretches of fast riding and lots of stretches of slow riding on that descent.
The whole thing just seemed slow from observation.
Yeah. The whole thing felt slow.
Yeah, you had pretty, maybe you didn't feel this way, but you seemed to have pretty high spirits the whole time, just remarking that it was slow.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially once the first 300 miles were over, I can't think of a moment after that where I really felt defeated. There was moments early on where I felt like, oh my gosh, this is going to take me like 20 days to complete. This is so slow. This is so hard. Like, why am I doing this to myself? But yeah, I don't think there was ever a point where I was like, I'm done. I'm not doing this. I was just like, yeah, this is just the course. Like, I just got to keep moving forward.
Yeah, I think there was some teary phone calls. The one call that really sticks out in my mind is when you like fist bumped a chola.
That was the worst. That was the worst.
He's just like, I pick up the phone and you're just, well, actually, I think you texted me saying, can I call you? And then,
yeah,
just the tears streaming. And for listeners, a chola is like a little cactus ball. They're really, really, really spiky and very sharp. And they stick
barbs on the end.
And they stick to you like Velcro.
The only way to get them off, because they're balls with spikes on all sides, is to take a comb and like basically pull it off with the comb. And then even then you still get spines stuck in you and you have to pull them out with pliers. And it's like one thing having it in you and it's painful, but like even once it's out, the pain still lingers for like a good 10 minutes and just like stings and hurts. And like any muscles that it was in just feel like tensed. Yeah, that was, I think, the morning of day 4. And it just was like one of the most awful feelings.
Yeah. Any other cactus attacks?
Yeah. Something that looked like either like an aloe plant or an agave plant. I don't know what it was, if it was either of those or just of the same genus of cactus. But I saw it. And I was walking with my bike and I somehow still like walked straight into it. And it just like, it sliced my socks open, sliced my calf open. Cause like there's a few different species or like types of this plant. There's like light green and dark green ones. And the light green ones you hit and they're just kind of rubbery and they flop. They look spiky, but they're not spiky. And then the dark green ones are rock solid and their spikes are like knives. And yeah, so that cut up my calf pretty good and my sock. It didn't hurt that bad. It just like, I looked down and I was like, oh, I'm bleeding a lot.
Yeah. And the cactuses not only can like hurt you, but they can hurt your bike. But you didn't get any flats.
No, no flats in Arizona. I didn't put any air in my tires the entire race.
That's kind of crazy because people have a lot of tire problems on that race.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of people buying new tires in Tucson, which is in the first like 100 miles of the race, like 200K, people are like having to go to bike shops and buy new tires. There was at least 3 or 4 people that had to do that, that I was around. I think they were all 300 mile riders. So maybe they were riding things a bit more aggressively than I was, knowing that they had a shorter race and they could kind of push it a bit more, whereas I was being a bit more conservative. But yeah, it's seems pretty notorious for eating through tires. So I was happy with that. I actually, before the race, I messaged Alex because he had done it both of the years prior and asked him like what tires he was using, because I was like, whatever he's using, I'm going to trust. And he was like, this is what I've used the past 2 times and this is what I like. So I was like, I'm just going to do that and play it safe.
And it worked out. And Orange Seal.
And Orange Seal, yeah.
Kind of the most annoying sealant for your valves, because it almost always clogs them, at least for airplane travel. But it plugs. It just seals it all. It
just seals so well. Can't go wrong with it, really.
Trade-offs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Alex Schultz is a good shout for gear because he's done it so many times. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of talked about the cactuses, how slow the trail was. The lemon push is a huge feat. That I don't know if people, I think Hannah Simon said that she thought it was harder than the Grand Canyon.
But I strongly disagree.
I don't know. Fun little anecdote is that Jake was going the same speed as Hannah Simon in 2023. And on Track Leaders, it kind of gives you the times through all of the virtual checkpoints. And so I was always comparing, like, to figure out where you were. I would look at Hannah's time and then I'd look at where you were. And I was like, okay, he's going to probably reach. And you were only maybe 2 hours apart in the end or something like that, which was awesome. Yeah, lemon push versus Grand Canyon.
Grand Canyon's way harder, in my opinion. Lemon push, I think having your bike on the ground is actually, for me, I think easier to walk with, because you have something you can put your weight through, even if you're hiking with poles. But like with the bike, I felt like I could put my weight through it. It wasn't weighing me down, because I could kind of just like push it along beside me. On flat stretches or like less steep stretches, it's a lot less effort to push. Whereas like in the Grand Canyon, if you're walking on the flats, you still have that weight on your back. If you're walking uphill or downhill, you still have all that weight on you. And so you're always kind of fighting gravity, even when you should be working with gravity.
Mm-hmm. And not to continue to give you shit, but how many times did you go hiking with your bike on your back with all your stuff in it?
With all my stuff in it? Zero. 4 times with just my bike and my backpack, but yeah.
So maybe word for the wise, if you are, and the port, it was not a portage, it was kind of a roundabout. But yeah, probably recommended to do a bit more than that.
Yeah, definitely should have had more or at least like more simulated weight in my backpack, because it's one thing to carry an unloaded bike on your back. It's another to carry all your sleep gear, all your clothes, a bunch of food, and your bike on your back.
Mm-hmm. But that Grand Canyon.
10 out of 10. I don't know. There's like, I can't think of a time where a place has like had so much of like a draw and an impact on me. Like I knew it would kind of be special, but it was also just like, it's going to be a cool place to go to and to see. And that's kind of it. But it like, I don't know. There was something about it where it was just like, it was emotional being down there and it was emotional leaving it, because it was just so, so cool. The scale of it is just crazy. Even when you're in it, it's really hard to like wrap your head around the fact that it's like, okay, I've dropped like 500 meters down, but the bottom doesn't look any closer than like when I started going down. Like it's just, it's nuts.
Yeah. I mean, I know I've only ever flown over the Grand Canyon in an airplane, and I was pretty awestruck. I feel like a lot of that experience is something that you'll never be able to unpack, but I got not lots of videos, but a couple videos of Jake just like tears streaming down your face, trying to explain the magnitude of the moment and all of that.
Yeah, I think it was amplified by my timing of like starting the hike down like an hour before sunrise. So I was like just kind of feeling my way down in the dark, and then all of a sudden like the sun starts to come up and everything's glowing. Like it's pretty cool. And then you're also like, at that point I was day 9, I think. So it's like you're 9 days in this like super hard ride. You've come so far and you're like so close to the end, and then you're in this like crazy special place at sunrise. Like it's just like all these things kind of layering on top of each other to make it so emotional and like make it extra special. Like I'm sure if I went to the Grand Canyon without my bike on my back, not at the end of an ultra, I would find it special and amazing. But I think like the added layers of all these other things just made it like extra special and made it extra emotional.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy the places that we go. And also the Grand Canyon is, what is it, like one of the monuments of the world? It's one of those things that people travel from all over to see and experience because it's like this natural phenomenon.
Yeah, I'm laughing because the lobby of the hotel that I stayed in Tusayan, which is the town that is like, I don't know, 5K south of the Grand Canyon south rim, the hotel lobby is filled with people from around the world speaking all kinds of different languages. And it was like quite jarring going in there, because that was like my first time not in a gas station that I'd been inside for like 5 days, I think, 4 days. And to like be in this super bright hotel lobby that was like packed with people all speaking a multitude of languages around me. It was crazy, super overwhelming, but also like kind of like really surreal. I kind of felt like I was just floating around in there.
Yeah, it's like you come back to reality, but reality feels like, I don't know, some alternate universe.
Mm-hmm.
And then how far is it to go after the Grand Canyon?
How far was it to go after the Grand Canyon? Jeez. I want to say it like 120K maybe? Maybe a little bit more than that. I feel like my last day was like 120K riding. Maybe it was 150K from the Grand Canyon to the finish. And that included a hike up to the highest point in Arizona without my bike this time, though, which was really pleasant. And then hike back down and then ride to the finish. So,
yeah. How did it feel to cruise into the finish? Like, were you thinking about the whole year? Just that you were done?
I think I was just thinking that I was done. Yeah, I kind of like wasn't really too reflective. I was kind of just like, it feels good to be done right now. And then my like dynamo light randomly cut off. And I had a battery powered light on, but I was like, oh, that's really annoying. But I'm happy this happened 5 minutes from the finish. But I mainly started then thinking about how I could fix the dynamo light. That was what was occupying too much of my brain power for the fact that I just done a massive, massive ride. Yeah, then I rolled into the finish and Zach, Karen, Scott, and Karen's partner Max were all waiting to cheer me in, which was super cool to have people waiting there at the finish and them all cheering. And they brought a hot chocolate for me, which was awesome, and a like a raspberry cruller type thing, which was also delicious. They were like, oh, we're sorry, we're bringing you more like gas station food after that's all you ate. And I was like, no, this is perfect.
Yeah, I remember Zach messaging me being like, what would Jake like? And I think you were like, I don't want pizza. I didn't ask you, but you had kind of expressed you didn't really want all of these foods. So I kind of just said to him, like, I don't know how to help you. I don't know what I'll want. Juice?
Yeah. The funny thing, Zach was planning to bring food, but then Karen and Max were texting him being like, he's going to be here any minute. You got to get up here. And so Zach like ripped up and got there and then pulled out the tracker after he had parked to make sure that I wasn't like just about to rock up. And I was like still 10K away. And he was like, he hasn't even got to the like hardest part of the single track descent yet. Like, why did you guys rush me? So he ended up waiting around for like 45 minutes with them for me.
Yeah, that's always what happens though. Everybody's looking at the tracker and you're like, oh, they're so close. They're so close. They're so close. And there's always a chance that the tracker is wrong, that it's not, you know, it doesn't update. And so better not to miss. But yeah. Wow. What a crazy amount of bike riding to do in a year.
It was a lot. Plus all the riding in between all of the races. It's just like, yeah. But the crazy thing for me is I like still just like, I don't feel like not riding.
That is crazy to me.
I mean, I got back and I was like back to commuting by bike every day. And then I think I was like a week removed from finishing Arizona when I started to just like ride for fun again after working on weekends with you and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't have mental fatigue on riding. I feel, I don't know, as motivated as ever by the bike, which is
cool.
Really fun. Yeah.
It's kind of surprising. Some people come out of that year and they need a break. But not you.
No,
well,
yeah,
you rested. You've definitely rested.
Yeah. Yeah. I've taken it easy for the last month, but I've still been pedaling. I have a streak of riding to and from work every day so far this year that wasn't a thing at the start of the year, but it got to the point where it's like, well, I've come so far, it'd be silly not to maintain now.
Mm-hmm. You haven't gotten a car. Why don't you pull up your questions from people if there's anything we missed before you... I want you to rank your thrift store outfits.
Okay, where's my... Do you want to read the questions or should I?
Oh, I can read them. Just throw your phone at me. Okay, your best sleep, not in a hotel.
Best sleep, not in a hotel, I think was the pit toilet after the Grand Canyon, because it was the cleanest pit toilet I've ever seen. It smelt like chemicals and it was so warm. It was like 1 degree Celsius outside that night with a crazy wind. And like, it was so warm in the pit toilet. I had an awesome sleep and then got up at 1 a.m. and felt rested and ready to ride.
Nice. Why would you recommend the Triple Crown or any of the races or not?
I mean, I don't know that I'd ever like necessarily recommend the Triple Crown to someone just like looking for something to do. I would recommend it to people who are like thinking about it. If it's like in your mind is something you think you might want to do, I would always be like, hell yeah, go for it, chase that. But I don't think I would ever recommend it to someone who's like, oh, I'm looking to do like 3 races this year. Should I do these 3? I would probably be like, maybe not. But I would 100% recommend all 3 of them as individual events, depending on what you want. I mean, the Divide, crazily, was my favorite. I think I'd get a lot of heat for saying that from some people who don't see it as like...
My eyeballs just rolled all the way back to my head. Just because you're like, I'm not going to be one of those people that gets obsessed with Tour Divide. And somehow it comes up semi-frequently.
I mean, it's just... there's something special about crossing a continent like that. But yeah, the Divide was my favorite, but the other 2 were also awesome. I think I'd definitely go back and tour Colorado. I don't think I have an urge to race it again, but if you like racing single track, it's a great one. And then Arizona, I have like an inkling that maybe I'll be back one day when the Grand Canyon crossing is fully back in. But I don't really feel a sense of rush to be back to that one. But yeah, I would recommend that one to anyone who just wants to like, either they like riding in the desert or they want to really find something to push themselves. I think everyone that has done Arizona talks about how like it pushes you to go deeper than other races. And I 100% agree. It's pushed me really hard. but was so, so rewarding as a result. And you see some really amazing things too.
So then that begs the question, which our good friend Zach asked, are you looking forward to doing the Triple Crown again next year?
I don't think I will ever do the Triple Crown again. I say that now. Anything can change, but I, for me, I think it's a thing where I've done it. I don't feel the need to really do it again or chase a faster overall time. I think I could see like wanting a faster time on the divide, for example, but I think trying to pull together all three again, just, I don't think I have that in me.
Yeah. Your wife doesn't really want you to do that again either. I mean, if you wanted to do it, you could do it, but that's a whole other thing. What kept you focused for that many days of racing?
Oof. I don't actually, I think like the fact that I'd done so many days kept me focused towards the end. Definitely like for all of Arizona, what had kept me focused was the fact that I had done Divide and done Colorado. And I was just like, I've come so far. I just got to keep going. Colorado, I mean, I think being sick made me lose a lot of focus in the first half, and then overcoming that gave me the focus to finish it. And then Divide, any focus I had was just kind of down to being focused on that race as an individual race and wanting to go fast and do well there.
Mm. I think we answered most, almost all the questions, but one more when we were chatting. I'll save the last one as our last thing. But I think the post-race outfits are kind of amazing. So yeah, what was your best Goodwill find this year?
Best Goodwill find. I'm trying to think. I think the Vans that I got for $10 that are like basically brand new from the Goodwill and Golden are probably one of my favorite things and like the best deal I got.
I like your man purse.
The man purse. It, after Arizona, I realized I had no bag to take all my batteries home in. And so I was like, oh, I'll look in the bag section to see if they have like a cheap backpack or something that I can like throw my batteries in for my carry-on or like a tote. And there was this like big chunky man purse. It almost looks like a bag that you'd put a bowling ball in if you were like a professional bowler. And it was like $5. And I was like, yeah, why not? I don't think it's going to see any use again for me. I think it's a donation item. I'm going to pass that on to someone else. Yeah.
It's funny that you spend these cheapy outfits and then you go looking for the most expensive underwear.
Yep. I'm loyal to Saks Underwear. They're a Vancouver-based company. And so I know that they're pretty readily available. And so once I've located my Goodwill, the next thing I look for is a Saks dealer and I'll go buy my $20
overpriced $30 underwear
and then go spend like $15 total on a head to toe outfit. So
it's ridiculous, but
comfort, it's worth it.
It does make me laugh. Thank you for sharing that. Well, so now you've done the Triple Crown, you've done Silk Road. One listener said, now that you've crushed a big part of the bike pack world, what's next? Which everybody always wants to know what's next. I kind of hate that question, but got to give people looking forward to something.
Mm-hmm. I am going to do Atlas Mountain Race in February, which is a race I've wanted to do since before the first edition even happened. So I'm happy to finally be making it happen and finally heading to Morocco. Mel's got to go the last 2 years, so I'm excited to get to go now and see what it's all about.
I am excited for you to race.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I feel about you racing while I'm working.
It's going to be interesting to see how it works.
Yeah, because like we won't be able to, there's many things, like for many reasons, we won't be able to talk on the phone as much. And it's, yeah, we'll be very.
Are we allowed to talk on the phone at all?
I don't know. I mean, obviously I can't give you any information, nor do I do that anyways. I wonder. That's a question for Mr. Trees.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll have to talk to Nelson. He can pass my messages on to you. And go act as an intermediary.
I think that's maybe not allowed. I don't know why I think that might not be allowed. But anyways, yeah, Morocco in February. I'm happy the Triple Crown's over. This year was...
Me too.
I mean, we didn't even get into the whole part about how we had completely diverging schedules this year, but...
Well, they lined up for Colorado. I mean, that was honestly, part of the reason I ended up saying yes, I was going to do Colorado is because Mel was in Kyrgyzstan. And I was like, well, I'm going to be on my own. Like, how am I going to kill some time? And I was like, oh, go to Colorado.
Yeah, but our poor cat.
She had a friend with her.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm super glad to share your story. I hope people enjoyed listening. I was so well behaved. I really didn't interrupt you too many times. I have to say, when you... Maybe someone will appreciate this. Maybe now I'm just rambling. But when you're like, oh, I take everything day by day, I just can't help but think of that World Tour meme where they splice together all the directors and they, like, you know, ask them about the Grand Tour and they all go day by day, day by day, day by day.
That was what was going through my head as I said it.
I am really proud of myself for how well behaved I was. Sitting down and interviewing your spouse, it really makes me realize how much I actually interrupt Jake in real life. And he's... I can't let Ben edit that part out. I'm sure maybe some of Jake's cackle made it from the other room as he heard me record that. But it's true. That is life in a partnership. Sorry, Jake, for all the interrupting, but I know you love me. We rarely sit down to reflect like that, so it was really nice to record and hear more about this past year from kind of a different perspective, but also take a trip down memory lane. Though I can do without the stress of Colorado Trail Race again. That was a bit much for my wee little heart. If you loved today's episode, please follow and give us a 5-star review wherever you are listening. And if you're feeling extra generous, consider pledging your support at the Buy Me a Coffee link in the show notes. As always, thank you to the amazing Ben Cranell for turning around these edits every single week, and to the good folks at Albion for their support in keeping us up and running and truly being the biggest cheerleaders of all things detours. That's all for this week, so until next time, happy trails.